I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and archived on TVTimeMachine.com.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow-white turtle doves. I like to teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
Perfect harmony.
Perfect harmony.
I like to buy the world a coat
and keep it company.
That's the real thing.
I like to teach the world to sing.
Perfect harmony.
Perfect harmony.
And I'd like to buy the world a coat
and keep it company.
It's the real thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be the greatest TV commercials from the past to the present. Advertising veterans Lisa Rothstein and Bruce Arendash will join us to help navigate this particular excursion celebrating the best of classic and modern-day TV commercials. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we will showcase some of the greatest television commercials in the history of advertising. Although some view these ubiquitous vignettes as an excuse to make a sandwich, let the dog out, make a phone call, check email, wash a few dishes, or visit the water closet, we will spend the next hour in celebration, playing peerless presentations of perfectly persuasive pitches both past and present. On this edition of our program, we are pleased to welcome two of the best madmen and women in the ad game, Bruce Arendash and Lisa Rothstein. Mr. Arendash has served as Senior Vice President and Creative Director at Lintas Worldwide and Gray Advertising, and Ms. Rothstein has served as Vice President and Creative Director at firms such as Young & Rubicam, Lintas Worldwide, and Lowe Paris. Over the next few segments, Lisa and Bruce will not only help us explore the best TV commercials over the past five decades, but they'll pierce the advertising veil, giving us a behind-the-scenes look at the type of creativity that helped conceive our cornucopia of classic commercials. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to squeeze the Charmin, feel free to challenge your short attention span as we slip from the restraints of the present and enter a, but wait, there's more, past. Lisa and Bruce, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Fine. How are you? How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
Are you ready to do something really commercial?
Always.
Okay. Yes, we are. That's what we're about.
Hey, Bruce, where were you born, and where did you spend your years growing up?
Well, I probably was born, probably, I think I was born, actually, in a place that's the heart of advertising, which is Brooklyn, New York.
Now, where did you go to school, and what ultimately led you to enter the field of advertising?
Well, you know, like I went to Queens College, which is City University of New York, as a fine arts student. After that, I realized that it was pretty difficult to just go out there and be the next Picasso. Right after that, I decided to go to the School of Visual Arts and take advertising courses. And it was much, much more directed at a career, a specific career. And as soon as I realized there were advertising courses, that's when I just sort of rocketed.
Now, we mentioned the firms that you worked for earlier. What were your duties and responsibilities there?
Well, I began as an art director, and an art director in an advertising agency is someone initially starting as an assistant to help the creative teams who come up with advertising ideas and to put a visual to them, do anything it sort of would take to make presentations to a client, show how the advertising would look, and then progress from there. The art director, although it sounds specific, is part of a creative team, and he or she helps give the advertising a visual look.
Now, is there a certain personality that is attracted to advertising?
No, actually not. I mean, the best advertising agencies are comprised of people from every walk of life.
It's true.
In fact, that's the school that is fished by the advertising agencies for talent.
Are advertising people different than other corporate people in terms of their sensibilities?
We're luckier because we get to do fun stuff all day. It's a desk job, most fun desk job ever. And we do have a lot more fun. I mean, I think, you know, to me, every day at the office was like walking onto the set of a sitcom, you know, where I was like the straight man. I thought I was funny. Most of the people I was working with, a lot of them had a really, really good sense of humor and really quick and very bright. I really didn't find, I don't know about you, Bruce, but I mean, even our stupidest colleagues were a lot smarter than most people I knew outside of the office.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you say if you were the straight man, because if you were the straight man, then that place.
Well, you were you're the funny one. When we worked together, you were the one who was cracking everybody.
Yeah, where did you work together?
And we worked together at Lintas. I mean, mm-hmm. that was when we first met because I had been working at Young and Rubicam, and my boss there, Frank DeVito, moved to Lintas, and then he kind of, you know, Pied Piper'd a bunch of people from Young and Rubicam over there, and that's when I first started working with Bruce.
Now, how did you work together? What was your working relationship like, Bruce?
Well, as soon as I met Lisa, I knew it was like going to be a great ride because she, unlike some of the other people that I had worked with, and by the way, Lisa's a copywriter by trade or profession, however you want to call it,
yeah.
And that's sort of the other half of the team, is a copywriter and art director.
Right, we need to explain that. But go.
And that is on, again, this is on the creative side of the advertising agency. There's other elements in the advertising agency, the business people, the account people, research and media and all those kind of things. But you know, we all believe that, you know, sort of nothing is more important than the creative conception.
Well, what we make is what all these people are selling. You know,
right.
we create the product of the advertising agency, and the account people and the media people basically, you know, shepherd it, sell it, place it. You know, but if there's no it, you know, there's no business. So
it's the so we're really at the core in many respects of the advertising that you see on TV or on billboards or print ads, and of course on the internet and all kinds of media now, which is really sort of just unbelievably ubiquitous in every way. But our relationship as a team was sort of like two kids.
It's funny. Like the first day we started working, we started like, you know, finishing each other's sentences, which is amazing. And I mean, the way it should work with an art director and a copywriter is, and I think our relationship was really perfect that way, is that you just basically sit and bounce around ideas, you know, and sometimes you don't even realize you're working. Sometimes you're not even really working. You're getting breakfast, you're hanging out, and then, you know, you've got an assignment, you've got to, you know, you're basically talking about, like, well, what if this would happen? What if that would happen? She walks into the room and then she says, you know, and it's neither, I mean, Bruce talks about his being, you know, from the artistic side, but I always felt that he was as good a writer writer as I was, and that was what was fun for me, because sometimes, a lot of times he'd come up with the better lines, you know, and everybody would give me credit for it, and I'd say, no, my partner came up with that.
No, I don't know. See, I disagree. I mean, I might have had better handwriting, but I don't know if I was a better writer.
But I mean, you came up with some really, really good lines. I mean,
well, that's why I got into it. I mean, you know, everybody has their talents and their desires, and that's why, you know, advertising, as we sort of had been involved with it, was really sort of a great sort of melting pot of the mental and processes and a great environment. Because what happens in advertising agencies is, and again, you know, sometimes it's a big pressure cooker. I can't speak for every moment, but, you know, but the idea is there's still something you have to focus in on. You still have to understand what the products are about or the services that you're selling, and that has to do with the entire agency. And you really, you know, with that mission, you still have to feel as a human being. There's no mechanics to it. You have to, again, like the cliche images of guys or girls sitting around in their offices playing Nerf basketball, right, and throwing.
Like in 30 something.
Yeah.
In 30 something, yeah. There is a lot of that. I mean, that is true. And I think a lot of the 30 somethings, and even before that, there was even a sitcom with, you would know, Tom Hanks, where he was 60 seconds Street or something like that.
Oh, right.
Bosom Buddies.
They Bosom Buddies. Bosom Buddies, yeah, with Peter Scolari, right.
Right, right, which was a great show, and I remember seeing that and going, that's cool. You know, it really had a lot of that energy. Of course, it wasn't sort of scripted in a 30-second mode, but we sort of lived it, and yet you had to have that kind of fun to loosen up to then get serious, because really, at the end of the day, it was really, you know, critical to come up with the kind of idea and the kind of thinking and thinking it through that warrants a client paying $10, $30, $40, $100 million for it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, it's a crazy business.
When you're being creative, how conscious are you of the fact that while you're being creative, you also have to persuade a lot of people? How does that factor into it?
Oh, I think it helps. For me, it helps. I mean, because for me, it's like, okay, I look at this thing, you know, whatever it is, a bar of soap, you know, a box of pasta, and I think, okay, this is just, you know, a bunch of molecules. What would make me want this? You know, what would make a person want this? And what, you know, why do I want this? And
you're hungry.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, what would make me hungry? How could I show this so that it would be hungry? What would I say about it? What would I you know, what story could I create? That's what it's really is, storytelling, and that I love about this. And so, you know, for me, it kind of focused, for me, having to persuade and having to have a strategy. I know that a lot of creative people felt like it was kind of a prison. Oh, they just want to be able to create and do whatever they want. But I always felt that having a strategy and having to have a persuasive argument was focused my creativity. So I had to, you know, it gave me more something to work with, more than just, you know, being able to do anything I wanted.
Yeah, I mean, the creativity in this sense has to be in context. I mean, your creativity is a big word, and it can enhance and encompass just about anything. Anything could be considered creative. I mean, you know, you could sort of, you know, throw your coffee against the wall, and, you know, somebody, you might go, oh, isn't that beautiful? You know, the reality is also you need a canvas. You need some kind of binder for your creativity. And advertising, it's a mission, you know, whatever it is, and it's developed as a strategy. It's developed as a what they call a unique selling point, something that is believed to be the key factor in that product or in that brand, that particular brand that is going to be, you know, saleable.
Yeah, right. That's the big thing, that USP or unique selling proposition or unique selling point. Yeah.
Absolutely. What's the difference between one soap and another? You know, it's the cleanliness on one scale. It's the mothering or parental instincts on another. It's the hipness of another based on its scent. There's all kinds of different ways to go about it.
Right. So, you look at all these different little aspects. That's where the creativity comes in, because every soap is pretty much like another bar of soap, but they each have enough of a different sort of you know, attributes. Some of them are extrinsic, like extrinsic meaning like actual real physical things, like the smell, the shape, the look, you know, how clean it gets you and all that stuff. Is it a deodorant soap? Is it not a deodorant soap? I mean, I didn't even ever worked on soap, but I'm just using this as an example. And then there's the intrinsics. I mean, Irish Spring. There's nothing Irish. Actually, I did work on Irish Spring. There's nothing Irish. There's nothing at all Irish about Irish
Spring.
It's green.
It's green,
and I like it too.
Yeah.
But I mean,
and
it's
the accent of the actor. That's the other thing.
That's it.
They have
the bogus accent of the actor. actor. He was.
You mean it was bogus?
He was as Irish as I am. Let's put it that way. That guy. But the thing is that, you know, it was green, and they just evoked this fresh smell of what you'd expect the outdoors to be like. And they could have decided that fresh smell was New England or the tropics or something like that. They could have gone anyway with it, but they decided to create this whole sort of.
It's universe. Sort of a manly outdoor kind of sort of, you know, dusty thing.
Right, but the idea that it happens, that it takes place in Ireland, I mean, that was just someone's idea, you know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know whether they had, I mean, obviously, if that was the name of the product to begin with, you would...
I must admit, I used that soap many years ago before I knew better. And that advertising worked for me. It really did. And somehow there was a connection to that smell. I don't know if I was brainwashed.
But brainwashed in a good way. Isn't it more fun to when you're taking a shower and a regular everyday shower that you feel like you've gone to Ireland? Isn't that more fun than just?
But on the other hand, I mean, if the setting was Bosnia, would I think of Bosnia when I smelled that soap?
I think you probably would. So that's why they didn't pick Bosnia.
Wow,
you guys are magicians.
Bosnian Spring. It doesn't have the same ring.
When they came up with that product, it probably wasn't even the advertising agency. It was another step before that,
right,
that was product testing and development from the company.
Right, Colgate, I think, was the
Colgate, yeah. And then they had this, and they put it down there, and it was probably a brainstorming session, very much like what happens in advertising. Mm. It's this green thing, which somebody was sure to have said, hey, sort of like Irish Spring, that's refreshing, it looks, there's something in, you know, that precedes it, which then led to the advertising. I mean,
That's probably what happened. They probably came up with spring first, like spring, like springtime.
Sure, it's freshness and then,
Because another soap came out later that I did not work on. I don't know if it's Colgate or whether it's Unilever, called Coast, which is exactly like Irish Spring,
yes,
but like blue. And so that they evoke the ocean. But see, there's nothing about the ocean in this soap. It's just BS. When you can create a theater or a feeling or a sort of a story around a product, I think it makes it more enjoyable to use. It doesn't just sell the product. It makes it more a better, more fun experience because so much takes place in your head. You know, you create your own experience in your mind of everything that you come into contact with. And to me, advertising directs your mind to have a more pleasurable experience in enjoying the product. Yes, is it meant to sell and make money? Yes. But still, I enjoy using products because of the advertising that goes along with them more than I would if they were just, you know, on some generic sort of, you know, Soviet shelf or with a number on it.
And that is sort of, you know, wrapped up in the notion of what they call brand personality or brand character.
Right.
You know, you think about fabric softeners and why, you know, Snuggle is a little bear with a face on it and a personality. and you have these associations to it and the comfort that you get. And it takes you right back to your childhood with your little binky,
you know.
And your little soft little blanket.
I want to go home.
What's that?
I want to go home.
You want to go home?
Yeah, to a home I never had.
In some cases, that's what it is. It's like, you know, it's
nostalgia for something you never even got.
It's a substitute for a lot of things that you never really had.
We're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with advertising executives Lisa Rothstein and Bruce Arendash, who are traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.